Welcome, all you believers, idealists, skeptics, and all those who question the universe around them. I'm Bailey.
And I'm Ty. Welcome to Cult Talks Conspiracy.
Before we unseal this file, we wanted to fill you in on some really exciting news.
For as little as $3 a month, you can be a part of our pursuit to hashtag question everything by clicking the support the show link found in the show notes of each episode.
Your support would mean the absolute world to us and help us dive deeper into the mind-blowing conspiracies you, Ty, and I all love.
Thank you for joining us, seeking the truth, and as always, question everything.
You're listening to a Cult Talk Network podcast.
File access granted.
Welcome, all you believers, idealists, skeptics, and all those who question the universe around them. I'm Ty.
And I'm Bailey.
And this is Cult Talks Conspiracy, file 040. And we are doing another special event we did last month. We dedicated an entire month doing the obscure conspiracy theory icebergs. And this month, we are going to be focusing on my favorite cryptid, Sasquatch.
Oh, such a long time coming, too. Like,
oh, I know. I'm really surprised. Because we've touched on Sasquatch briefly, I know, like on our New Year's Day special back at the beginning of 2023, where we talked about our own encounters. And I'm trying to think if we talked about Sasquatch prior to this.
Definitely on the iceberg. There was one more.
Yeah, iceberg we did.
One more that you did that was like right before iceberg where he made his way into it.
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about Mount Shasta. Mm-hmm, I know he had a little bit on there. And then I think he was even mentioned back in Cult-tober when we were talking about like dogman sightings and
oh,
stuff.
Oh, yeah. How
we talk about Bigfoot a little bit. Mm-hmm. How like there's like a possibly like a misidentification between dogman and Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah.
So we talked about him back then. But yeah, we have yet to do a dedicated Bigfoot episode. And we're going to be doing three this month. All month. You're getting three episodes that are going to be Sasquatch-centric. But maybe it isn't April. Maybe it's Ape.
Oh, my God.
This month.
Jerry's gotten to you. Oh, God. Great. But the whole time, I'm a hypocrite because the whole time I was trying to think of something like really witty to say too about it. So, bravo.
I'm right. I wrote both these episodes you're going to hear, a file 040, and then the sequel episode will be 041. And then we're going to cap off the month with an encounters episode, which we love doing those.
Mm-hmm.
So, you got that to look forward to. And the way I decided to do this was, I've always been very intrigued by the different variations of Sasquatch throughout the United States. I mean, you talk about, I mean, there's a whole follow-up series I could do on this alone for the world. Because much like the United States, there are varying Sasquatch-type creatures throughout the entire globe. But just here in the United States, there's a broad range of different yet similar creatures that fall into this Sasquatch category. So, you know, I thought it'd be fun to go through. And what I did was I broke up the country into four regions.
Oh,
so we have the Northeast.
Mm-hmm.
We have the South, and we have the Midwest. And then of course we have the Western, the West Coast. So this episode is going to cover a large part of the United States. We're going to be talking about the Northeast region, the Midwest region, and the Southern region in this episode, because the West is, you know, to many the Sasquatch like Mecca.
Oh yeah.
So there's all kinds of stuff out there.
Oh yeah.
And it was too much to cram into this episode with the amount of stuff we're already going to be talking about. So it opened the possibility for that sequel. Because there's some wild stuff that comes out of the West Coast when it comes to Bigfoot.
Well, you have
it's just interesting stuff to talk about.
I mean, you have so many like mountain ranges and so many national parks that are over there, and just, you know, places that haven't been. Like I think there's a forest out in Washington that's like barely been explored, and it's like you get shit like that out there, and it's
Yeah, the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. I mean, Northern California and, you know, Washington State, there's parts of that wilderness that, you know, for all we know, has never been touched by man.
Oh, yeah.
That's why it's such a Bigfoot hotspot.
The fact that we have different regions of different types of Bigfoots and Sasquatches is just... It shouldn't be surprising, oh, yeah. But it is to me for some reason. I guess it just makes it real for me at this point. Like, oh, there's a lot.
And you'll see it varies even from state to state in certain points. But, you know, there are similarities to them. There are slight variations. But, you know, I wanted to hit on some of the really popular Bigfoots that I've heard of. And, you know, I'm sure I'm definitely missing some because there's, you know, I think I touch on a total of, there are 10 states that we're going to be talking about. So 10 different Bigfoot creatures from these 10 different states. Oof. And, you know, there's definitely some I've missed, some local legends and some little offshoots and things of that nature that definitely I didn't touch on.
But,
you know, it'd be interesting to see in the comments and everything, people... If you are from these states, it'd be interesting to hear if you know, we did miss something, you know, what you've heard about Bigfoot in your area. So, definitely a little episode that can probably be revisited again at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I want to do for a while. I've had this concept for a minute, and I think it's, you know, finally time we talk about Bigfoot here on Cult Talk Conspiracy. It's been a long time coming, almost a year and a half now.
Yeah.
We've been doing this, and we have yet to really focus on Sasquatch.
Oh my gosh, this is exciting. I'm excited. Let's do it.
So are you ready to go on this this road trip across the United States?
Let's do it.
You ready to go on this this Bigfoot road trip? And we're going to talk about all sorts of different variations of the King of Cryptids. You ready to unseal it?
Let's unseal this.
Let's go ahead and let's unseal File 040, Land of the Free. Home of the Beasts. Bigfoot, the king of cryptids, most commonly described as standing at anywhere from 6 to even some accounts of 15 feet. Massive broad shoulders covered from head to toe in dark hair, usually a dark brown or a reddish dark brown. Some reports have described it as either having an ape-like face or, in some cases, a human-like face. Nonetheless, it is what many consider the North American ape man. So today, we're going to talk about all the different American variations of this giant cryptid. Now, that's not to say there isn't the option of some time. Like I said, going abroad, traveling the world, talking about things like the Yeti of Asia, the Yowie of Australia. Almost every culture in the world has tales of monstrous hair-covered wild men. Native American tribes are no different. Created by the Yakuts people between 500 and 1,000 years ago, standing on the Tule River Indian Reservation in California is the Painted Rock Petroglyph. Now, this petroglyph depicts a group of giant humanoids who are called the Family and referred to by local tribesmen as the Hairy Men. Now, just one of the many depictions of these creatures in Native American lore. The stories from the Iroquois people of upstate New York talk of the mighty stone giant with skin as hard as stone. The peaceful Tessimikus of the Lummi people, who are strictly vegetarian. And the Skookums of Mount St. Helens, who are a deadly clan of cannibals. I've heard a lot about the Skookums.
Really?
I've read about Bigfoot stuff. Yeah, that's like a very popular Native American legend.
Interesting.
Of these like Bigfoot type creatures. They're very vicious. They devour, you know, anyone who comes into their territory. Now, much like across the globe, legends of these creatures vary from region to region. So, as I said, I divided the country into four regions: Northeast, Midwest, South, and finally the Bigfoot Mecca, the West, which is going to get its own episode.
Oh, wow.
And first, we're going to explore the Northeast Corridor. This is Maine all the way down to Pennsylvania is what the Northeast Corridor will contain. Now, you know, I'm only focused on the two popular Bigfoot-type creatures in this corridor. You know, I know there are sightings in Maine and things of that nature, but we're going to take a nice little trip to scenic upstate New York.
Ooh.
Washington County, the quaint town of Whitehall. Now, when most people hear New York, they are, of course, reminded of the sprawling streets and high-rise buildings of New York City. Not the rural juxtaposition of the rest of New York. New York State is made up of rolling hills, the Adirondack Mountains, rivers and lakes, such as the Great Lake Champlain of upstate New York, which, of course, has its own dedicated cryptid and Champ, the water monster of Lake Champlain. Yeah, upstate New York is mostly just countryside. So you have this very unique thing where people hear New York, and they immediately think of New York City. But the actual state itself is quite quaint. Now, as mentioned, Sasquatch-like creatures had been part of the region with the legend of the Stone Giants from the Iroquois people, otherwise known as the Genisquaw. These creatures have been described as Bigfoot's bigger and meaner cousin.
Ooh.
Known to capture their victims and twist their heads off. Yeah, they're pretty brutal. They'll grab your head and just twist it until it comes off.
Oh my gosh.
They stand between 9 and 11 feet and also sport a hide that's as solid as rock.
What?
Making it invincible to most weapons. Yeah, arrows and swords and whatnot can't penetrate the skin of the Stone Giant, hence the name,
oh,
the Stone Giant.
God, I don't like that. Nope.
Now, according to Chief Elias Johnson in his historical chronicle, Legends, Traditions, and Laws of the Iroquois, they were at one point invaded by powerful stone giants. The tall, fierce, and hostile tribe came from the wilderness and took men, women, and children, who were all then devoured in one large bloody feast. Great. In modern times, encounters, or at least those fortunate enough to report encounters, are less gruesome. Hunters and hikers have reported various sightings of large creatures with mysterious glowing eyes that watch them at night. But the most infamous sightings came in 1976, when during August, there were three teenagers who reported to the local newspaper they saw a giant creature in a field at the Abar Road in Whitehall. This creature stood between 7 and 8 feet tall. Not long after this, an officer by the name of Brian Goslin, not Ryan Gosling, but Brian Gosling.
How'd you know my brain went there?
So my brain went there too when I read it.
Oh, okay. It's like, oh, Ryan. Hi, Ken. Not that one.
Now, he was on patrol and he witnessed the same creature also on a bare road. And the following days, other officers would actually report sightings of the creature. And they began calling it the Beast of Whitehall. There's a excellent documentary from the Small Town Monsters guys, which I've mentioned them a number of times in this because they do some great Sasquatch documentaries.
Small Town Monsters are just they're top notch, man. They're awesome.
Oh yeah, they're great. Yeah, they the Beast Whitehall is really good. I have that on DVD. Mm-hmm. Now Whitehall has fully embraced the Beast, dubbing itself the official home of Bigfoot.
God, I love it.
They've incorporated the creature onto their official town seal.
Nice.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty cool. You can look up the seal for Whitehall, New York, and it's got Bigfoot on it. It's really interesting. And they also host the annual Sasquatch Festival and Calling Contest every September.
Oh, that's cool.
Large tracks are still commonly found throughout the region. In 2023, tracks with a 4 foot stride were discovered by a former police officer in Indiana, Pennsylvania. So not far away. You know, it's like this thing has moved. Now, one particular sighting to come out of Pennsylvania, since we're on the topic of PA, was reported in 1940 near Snydertown. A man, his wife, and his sister were driving along a back road when a creature that was described as a large monkey stepped out in front of them. Interestingly, all three witnesses agreed that this creature had long... This is one of those like variation things that you'll see as we talk about these things. They all, as similar as they sound, it seems like as we move across region, they'll have like a thing that sets them apart.
Okay.
So all three of the witnesses agreed that this large monkey had a long curved tail that curved way above its head.
Huh.
So this one had tail, and that's something you don't see a lot in Bigfoot stuff. I can't think of any Bigfoot report I've ever seen or any depiction of Bigfoot, even, you know, art or, you know, movie or whatever, where it has a tail.
No. That's really unusual.
Yeah, that's something, like I said, we're going to kind of see that throughout this as we touch on these, that there's like a distinct characteristic that sets this, you know, whatever we're talking about from the previous or the following. There's just something different as we move from region to region. Now, on another variation too of the PA Bigfoot, mm-hmm. There's a very creepy video you can find online. It's called the Albino Bigfoot, and it was recorded in 2010 in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. It's by far like one of the creepiest Bigfoot, you know, footages I've ever seen. So it's like a white Bigfoot just in the middle of the Pennsylvania woods, mm-hmm. Which you don't see a lot. You know, that's mainly like, you know, for a creature that would be in a more snowy environment. Right.
Yeah. However,
like the Yeti is reported as being white.
Oh yeah. However, in some Nordic religions, they do believe that having a white animal or like offspring amongst the tribe is actually meant to bring like peace and good fortune. And it's supposed to bless the herd and everything. So maybe he was like, there was a family and like, he was like the blessing. Like he it's saw there, there's, it's Bigfoot Jesus.
Now it's interesting too, as you know, I believe I've talked about the BFRO, the Bigfoot Research Organization, led by Matt Moneymaker. Now there's even like, you can go state by state. There's usually like a like dedicated Bigfoot society or a Bigfoot group that, you know, kind of tracks and documents sightings of each state. PABigfoot.com is the official website for the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society, and they've collected hundreds of sightings.
Oh wow.
And they also have a really great interactive map of the state, mm-hmm. that shows locations of those sightings.
Oh, that's cool.
Yes, PA actually is like a pretty heavily reported state as far as Bigfoot goes.
Interesting.
We'll go ahead and bring things home now. Like I said, you know, we're not touching on every state. We're not touching on every legend. I want to touch on these like variations that we see.
Okay.
And you know, we talk about New York. We talk about PA. Now we're going to go ahead and we're going to move regions. We're going to go ahead and bring things home to our neck of the woods. We're going to explore the Midwest region.
Hey.
Yeah, this region stretches from Ohio to the Dakotas, the Great Lakes, and as far south as Missouri. Well, just across the border, right over to Ohio, where we don't just have Sasquatch, we have the Grassman. That's what I was always warned of when I was a kid. My grandma would tell me if I wasn't good, the Grassman would get me.
thanks, Grandma.
You know, if I didn't come in before dark, the Grassman. Yeah, I was always, that's like the little like the boogeyman story that I was told as a kid. Was I'd get taken by the Grassman.
Oh man, we were I can't talk about ours. Not on air anyway. I'll tell you later when we're off air.
Jeez. As of 2023, Ohio holds the number 4 spot for the most Bigfoot sightings. The Delaware tribes of the Ohio Valley would regularly leave food as a peace offering for a tribe of giant bipedal ape men they called the Wild Ones of the Woods.
Ooh, they had a cool name.
Yeah. The Native Americans believed the creature to have a higher level of intelligence, and unless provoked, it was a, you know, they were pretty peaceful. So they'd always lead these peace offerings. So if they were making a long trek or, crossing into what they believed to be the territory of the wild men, the wild ones, they would leave offerings and make sure they respected the area to maintain peace.
Nice.
A little known Ohio Sasquatch was reported way back in 1959 when two teens parking. Are you familiar with the term parking means? Do you know what that is?
Yes, Tyler.
You know? Okay.
I
don't know. Listen,
wait.
You ever been parking?
What is it? What was the question?
I said, have you ever been parking in them? And do you know what it is?
My parents listen to this podcast, and there's just some things that mom and daddy don't need to know. So,
well, these two teens, they were parking at the local Lover's Lane near Charles Mill Lake. Exactly. And they saw a large, hairy beast rise up from the fog with a pair of piercing orange eyes.
Oh, no.
Earning it the name Orange Eyes. Orange Eyes is a is like the Bigfoot of like the northwest part of Ohio. They call it Orange Eyes up there.
Interesting.
So you have the grass man, but then you also have like the Orange Eyes variation of it. But a more infamous and well-known encounter is that of the Minerva Monster. On August night in 1978, Evelyn and Howie Clayton were enjoying the summer night when their grandchildren came running into the home crying and screaming about a hairy monster they saw while playing in a nearby quarry. The children were petrified, and the Claytons chose not to wait around to see what actually scared them.
Oh,
they loaded up the grandkids and they fled the home.
I like them already. Nope. We're not fucking around. Nope.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't make that mistake.
Yeah. No, don't do that.
I've seen way too many horror movies. You know what happens. You get out of there. Yep. Play it safe.
Mm-mm.
This would be the beginning of the Clayton family and their encounters with the grassman. One evening while preparing for dinner, Evelyn was terror-stricken when she looked up to see a giant hairy creature staring through their kitchen window. Upon hearing his wife's screams, Howie grabbed his gun and came running, but the creature had vanished into the night.
Ooh.
They began finding large footprints around the property, and the smell of rotting eggs lingered in the air, and it just never went away.
Mm-hmm.
It was just there.
Yep. Yep.
So they were kind of like haunted, not only by like the sightings. It was like this Bigfoot had kind of just moved onto their property.
And it stinks.
And again, the very first Small Town Monsters movie is about the Minerva Monster. So that's what kind of put them on the map. That's a good one as well. The creature didn't only hide in the dark. As the Claytons began regularly seeing the creature in broad daylight, and sometimes even in a pair, they would see one or two at a time.
Oh, no.
All this culminated to the Claytons finding their German Shepherd with its neck broken.
Absolutely not.
Yep, nope. Snapped its neck.
Nope, we now have a problem.
and this, the Minerva Monster, has become infamous. Minerva, Ohio, they host the, I think it's Cryptid Fest they host up there now. They have a yearly festival focused on Bigfoot and cryptids. And I believe that's hosted by the Small Town Monsters crew. It's like a big deal. It's people come from all over for that.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a very big deal. And Minerva Monster has become very infamous with Ohio. It's kind of like the Ohio Grassman sighting that people will reference when they're talking about the Grassman.
Nice.
And before we move on, I want to touch on, for anyone that's not familiar, we're talking about the grass man. And the grass man isn't made of grass. That's not what it's what that's implying. But the reason it's called the grass man is because hunters and hikers and things of that nature would find these large grass nests.
Mm-hmm.
And with no sign of like deer tracks or, a bear or anything like that, it would just be a large grass nest that you would commonly find giant humanoid-like footprints around. And these have been reported all over Ohio. And that's what earned it the name, the grass mane for these large grass nests that it would build. So we're going to head up north to Michigan. Have you lived in Ohio long enough yet where you get pissed when you hear about Michigan?
No.
You get furious, you get irate.
No, it's honestly because like Ben and I will like take little getaway trips over to Michigan, and it's like our like kind of quick, you know, get out of town.
What's in Michigan?
There's a lot of things in Michigan. You know, there's wonderful lakes and, you know, greenery and, you know, there's
plant life.
And, you know, like there's a diner that I really love going to as well. So, you know, shout out to Adrian, Michigan.
Okay. Well, I don't think the sighting I have doesn't take place in Adrian, but in the last few years, Michigan has really became famous for the Dogman sightings.
Mm-hmm.
That have taken place all over the state. That's really what their cryptid has become, is the Dogman. You know, much like West Virginia has the Mothman, Ohio has the Bigfoot, it's the Dogman for Michigan.
I think this past Cult Tabor, we visited the Michigan Dogman a little bit with the Cult Allure guys.
Yes, we did. We talked about that in the werewolf sightings back in Cult Tabor. So definitely check that out. And we talk about in that as well the idea that some of the Bigfoot sightings in the past have been misidentifications of the Dogman or vice versa.
Oh, yeah.
Because the Dogman thing really doesn't seem to be like, it seems to just became popular here in like the last couple decades or so. I mean, I remember the first time I heard about it was on Monster Quest.
Yeah, same.
And that was like the first time I'd ever heard of like the Michigan Dogman.
Same.
So it's interesting that maybe the Dogman has been there longer is the theory, but people were seeing it misidentifying as a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch type creature.
Which is, what if you just have both? Like, that's the scariest
something too.
One.
That's something they touched on in one of the small town. We're just going to gargle small town monsters balls in this episode.
That's fine.
You can't talk about cryptids and not talk about them, because they're so good at what they do. But they have that documentary they did last year, the American Werewolves documentary.
Yes.
And they touched on that, the reports of people seeing Sasquatch and Dogman at the same time.
Weren't they like fighting like together or like against each other?
I think it was like both. Like maybe people think that they're like protecting the like there's like Bigfoot territory, Dogman territory, or that they're like in cahoots together. Stuff like that. You know, I've heard several stories of like cryptids being, you know, kind of mixed in. Like I know you can talk about Bigfoot and UFOs in similar vein.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where people have reported UFO sightings and locations where Bigfoot has appeared and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've even heard like a story a while back about chupacabras in Texas.
Whoa.
People believe them being like bloodhounds for Sasquatch. Like Sasquatch uses chupacabras as like its dogs.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I've heard like a story of that one time. But one of the most notable Bigfoot sightings in Michigan is that of being the Sister Lake Sasquatch or the Dewey Lake Monster. Now, the encounter itself isn't anything mind-blowing in the way of things we'll talk about in this episode. But what makes it interesting is how the community responded to the encounter. So, and you know, this kind of has a little bit to do with, it's like very similar to, you know, other Sasquatch sightings. Like I said, it's nothing like crazy, but it's just interesting how the town responds. In June of 1964, residents of Dowagiac, Michigan, began to report seeing a massive 10-foot tall, 500-pound, hair-covered monster with large glowing eyes.
Oh.
If you were to look up images of the Dewey Lake Monster, it's interesting because for whatever reason, all the like artist depictions or like people who do cryptid art, they make the Dewey Lake Monster like a hybrid of a gorilla and a bear for some reason. So I don't know if I missed the report of that or if that's just like something that someone did once and it just stuck. But people have chalked it up to being some sort of like Sasquatch bear hybrid thing for whatever reason. I couldn't find why, but all the artwork I found was like Bigfoot crossed with a bear. These reports spread like wildfire across Michigan and beyond to neighboring states. And monster and cryptid enthusiasts besiege the area.
Hmm.
And here's a notable aspect and a lesson. And something I've mentioned all the way back as far as, I think, File 001 talk about is, like, if you have, like, one of these local legends or you have, like, something like this, like, exploit it. Make some money because it's stupid not to. It's like, dumb to have something that people find interesting and you try to shoo it away. Like, make some keychains, make some fucking t-shirts, stickers.
Well, some people
lean into it. Make some money.
Oh yeah, I fully agree. But I get, like, where some people are, like, afraid to come out about it because they're afraid of being seen as crazy.
Right.
But it's like, I feel like we live in such a day and age now that, like, the cryptid and, like, cryptozoology community has, like, grown so much that we just want to know, like, are these things out there? And, like, can any questions that we have about them even be answered? So, yeah, absolutely. Definitely, like, get that shit out there. But I understand if you're scared. Just know that we're here and we're ready and, you know, we love you and we want to hear your stories.
Yeah, I think just small towns just should, like, if they don't have a cryptid, make one up and just make it your town
mascot. Make
it up. Make it your town mascot. And I guarantee you'll make some money and you'll probably have. You'll sell some keychains. You'll sell some t-shirts. You'll make a quick buck. I mean, I'm just saying. Jesus. Like, I don't see why you wouldn't.
All I'm thinking about right now is, like, the town I'm from, Vidalia, Georgia, or my parents are from, I should say. They have a Vidalia onion as their mascot. So all I'm thinking of right now is just, like, this onion cryptid running around Vidalia, just, like, stinking up the whole, like, town.
it's like Wisconsin. You know, they have the Hodag people. You know, they have. They put a statue of it in their town. It's like a focal point.
Oh, that's cool.
For people to come. You know, Point Pleasant with the Mothman. They've really leaned into it. Flatwoods, they've done the same. It's just wild to me that people don't do that. There's money to be made there. There's an opportunity and people just, like, want to, like, distance themselves from it. But I think if you just make it your town mascot, do what fucking Whitehall did.
Right. Yeah.
They're making bank off of that.
They really are. Same with Point Pleasant and Mothman. They're making.
Just mention that.
Woof. Yeah. Oh yeah. Sorry about that.
Now Dewey Lake, they were fully on board for this. They saw the opportunity and they seized it. They saw as, like, the monster hunters began pouring in, they were like, all right, let's get some money out of these people. So gas stations weren't just selling gas. They were instead selling monster getaway fuel.
Oh, gosh.
The local diners, they didn't just sell hamburgers. They had monster burgers.
Oh, gosh.
And you could complement that with a monster soda.
Oh, I love it.
You could go to local shops and pick up monster hunting kits, which included a net, flashlight, a squirt gun, a mallet, and a wooden stake.
I want one of those.
Yeah, that sounds like a cool thing. I think we should make those.
Yeah,
I bet we could get that shit for cheap. I bet we could put those together for nothing. A national newspaper dubbed Sister Lakes Monster Town USA.
Oh, cute.
The monster's influence is still felt today as it is celebrated annually as part of the Dewey Lake Boat Parade.
Aw.
And the Sisters Lake Brewing Company offers a very popular beer called the Dewey Lake Monster.
Ooh.
Now, although embraced by the local community, the actual witnesses are far less enthusiastic. Most refuse to do interviews, and they wish not to have their names associated with, as they call it, that thing. Mm. To this day, there are sporadic reports of someone seeing something, but nothing to the level of the 1964 sightings.
Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. It like came and went, but like it was such a big deal when it was there. Like for a short time in the 1960s, this town like fully embraced Monster Mania, and like it's still today. Life's just a lesson.
Strong.
If you have a small town monster, mm-hmm. you know, brace it.
It's just really
make you some money.
It's really interesting that the eyewitnesses refer to it as that thing and like will have nothing to do with it. That honestly, like my first thought about that is danger. Like is the creature really out there, and did these people have a more dangerous encounter with it than what we realize? You know, I don't know.
More like the feeling, you know, when they saw it, it probably did like legitimately strike fear into them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the rest of town were just like, hey, let's make some fucking money off this.
This is fucking cool. Like,
yeah, come exactly. Here. These people are like terrified of this thing they witnessed.
I don't know.
And everyone's running around with fucking squirt guns and mallets and shit. And
wooden stakes and
fucking
whatnot.
Terrified. Like, yeah.
With their nets just running around.
Yeah. Exactly. Now, south of Michigan, we find the state of Illinois, which is home to Murfreesboro and the Murfreesboro Mud Monster, a.k.a. Oh, yeah. Big Muddy.
Big Muddy.
That's what they call him, Big Muddy.
So my initials are BM, and I would have much rather been nicknamed Big Muddy than some of the other ones that my classmates came up with.
Bowel movement, yeah.
Yeah.
In 1973, on two consecutive days, June 25th, June 26th, Murfreesboro police received reports of a massive creature lurking in the woods on the outskirts of town near the Big Muddy River. The first reported sighting came in on the 25th when two teenagers, again, parking at the local Lover's Lane, heard a loud scream come from the forest that caught their attention. To their horror, they witnessed a 7-foot beast emerge from the forest, bipedal, white-haired, and completely covered in mud. The beast began approaching the vehicle and the teens, who quickly sped off, leaving the monster in their tracks. At the time, the local police considered the teens to be very reliable witnesses, as they were not married. And by the way the local culture was, them admitting to being out, involving themselves in promiscuous behavior, risked ridicule from the conservative community. So they were the local police were like, okay, you admitted all this stuff on top of having a Bigfoot or a monster sighting.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's really nothing for them to gain. They would have caught a lot of flack just from the first portion of that, promiscuous behavior. Upon investigating the report, police found tracks measuring 12 inches long, 3 inches wide, 4 inches deep in the mud. They didn't stick around long either, as shortly after arriving, they heard loud screams coming from the forest as well.
What the fuck?
The next morning, residents of a subdivision reported seeing the same creature walk through a nearby field and enter the woods. Police entered the woods with tracking dogs. They quickly found a footprint and noticed a strong, foul odor and a slimy film that covered the nearby tree branches.
Ew.
The dogs caught a scent and followed it to an abandoned barn, but refused to go inside. The officers argued amongst themselves. None of them wanted to enter either, so they abandoned the investigation. So they may have, like, the monster was hiding in a barn for all we know, and they were just like, we're not going in there.
I feel like someone's boss was pissed that day. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Y'all were scared. Like, but at the same time,
it's a big fucking scary monster for
same. Like, if I had been one of those officers and the dogs weren't even going to, absolutely not. Like, I get freaked out when Gypsy just starts looking out into the middle of nothing, and I'm like, what is it? Do we need to go? Like, like we should go, like, right now.
Yeah, Scully does the same thing, and it always creeps me out when she does it. Like,
I'm like, what are
she'll
you
look
seeing?
Out the window and like start like whining. I'll look out there, there's nothing out there, so like it creeps me out.
What if they like have a pact, like, you know, and like doggy heaven before they come down? It's like, you know, you have to like whine at nothing and freak your human out. That's like their penance.
Now, a few days later, on July 7th, this is the last sighting of the creature around this time. A carnival had came to town, and the workers heard panic cries coming from the stable where they kept the ponies. They found that outside the stable, a large, hairy albino monster was eyeing the ponies. Now, upon the workers arriving and the monster seeing them, it quickly fled into the woods. So this thing was, like, apparently about to break in there and fucking take a couple ponies out of there.
Uh-oh.
Big Muddy kind of a blip on the radar, but it's something that's upheld in Illinois mm-hmm. as like their monster. You know, the fact that it was terrified tracking dogs, mm-hmm. you know, it preyed on local teens at Lover's Lane. I mean, I think that's kind of like classic tropes for making a really great monster.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, it's in places where, like, there's not going to be much or any human interaction. Like, even with the ponies, like, it ran away as soon as a human was spotted. So, I mean, it's clearly not, you know, doesn't have very much contact with humans or tries to avoid it at all.
It doesn't seem like it. It doesn't seem like it was, like, malicious. You know, we, mm-hmm. it approached the car where the teens were. And, you know, the dogs were afraid of it, which, you know, means mm-hmm. they at least sensed that it was dangerous in some way. Mm-hmm. So, but it's interesting. There's no like attacks reported or anything like that. No.
Bigfoots might just be like fuck around and find out characters that it's like, listen, don't bother me. But if you do, you're going to regret that you had. Like, so, and I mean, honestly, with the fucking reputation of a Bigfoot, okay, you, that's fine. Like, okay, that, what's yours is yours.
Before we head south, though, we got one more thing to take care of here in the Midwest. And that is the legend of Momo.
Momo!
Residing out of Missouri and first reported in July of 1971, the Missouri Monster, a.k.a. Momo, is said to be a 7-foot-tall, hairy, man-like creature that roams the thick backwoods near the Mississippi River. According to the first report by Joanne Mills and Mary Ryan, they were having a picnic when the creature emerged from the forest and emitted a foul odor. A year later, a group of kids spotted the creature again, but this time carrying the corpse of a dead dog.
Oh!
Momo is actually notorious for preying on dogs and, like, other small, like, animals.
Yep.
So, like, around the area, around the, you know, the Mississippi River area, whenever, like, a pet goes missing or you find, like, a animal's body, it's mm-hmm. usually attributed to Momo as being a victim of the creature.
Oof.
Now, an interesting note about Momo, as we said, there's slight variations amongst these things, is that although the description falls in line with most other Sasquatch-type creatures, you know, hairy, big, you know, foul odor, all that stuff, Momo is said to have a much larger head than the others. And witnesses describe it as almost being like a pumpkin sitting on its shoulders. Like it's bulbous, it's, you know, oblonged.
Interesting.
It's not the conical type Bigfoot head that we see. So that's what sets it apart, is this weird shape that it has to its head that, you know, for the most part has never been explained why it has this deformation. But it is like some kind of deformity possibly with the creatures at this. And we are going to talk about deformities here later as well that have been reported in other creatures. As we head on south, back home for you, Bailey, right? Heading south. I know you're holding out for it to rise again someday.
Oh,
but
shut up. That's not what I said.
Day is not the day.
That's not what I said.
Oh, you say it all the time.
I just said quit picking on us. Like, that's all I said. That was all, no more, no less.
As we head on south, not to Georgia, although Georgia does have a history with the creature. And if you're around Blue Ridge, Georgia, you actually find Expedition Bigfoot, the Sasquatch Museum, which looks really cool. If you Google this museum, it looks really neat. I've never heard of it before, so it's definitely something I'd like to visit at some mm-hmm. point. We're going to talk about the Tennessee Wild Men.
Ooh.
Now, this is by far one of the more fascinating creatures in this file. And honestly, it's par for the course for the southern region. The southern region has very interesting lore around their creatures. They call it the Wild Man, and it does differ quite a bit from the creatures we've talked about so far. It appears to be much more human in nature, appearing less like a bipedal ape and more like a wild man. First reported in the late 1800s around McNair County, Tennessee, the Hagerstown Mail ran an article detailing accounts of, quote, a strange and frightful being. 7 feet tall, large red eyes, great muscular power, and a body covered entirely in hair.
Oh, interesting.
This being was said to be enraged by the presence of men, but would go into a terrifying frenzy of delight when it witnessed women. It would then attempt to carry them off into the woods, which it attempted on several occasions. There's several reports of women, you know, tending to their gardens or, mm-hmm. you know, just mm-hmm. walking on trails. And this thing would come out just in a frenzy and try to carry them off. And usually it was stopped by them wrestling free or, you know, some men or you know, kids or something like that would be nearby or kind of chase it off.
You literally like unlocked a memory for me. I remember living in Georgia. And like,
were you almost carried off?
No, nothing like that. No, I remember like our neighbors would like tell all the young girls, like, you know, be careful if you're playing at night. You don't want like the beast to come and carry you off or anything like that. And like, wasn't like a predator or anything. It was like literally like a beast. And like, I hadn't thought about that in so long. But like in our little cul-de-sac, I remember being told that by like neighbors and everything, because my parents never said anything like that, but they were also like, that was where I heard my first alien abduction story too, so.
Now that's interesting, because like too, like I've seen or heard reports of like out west at like Indian reservations, like mm-hmm. there's some Indian reservations, if you went to, they would not allow you to walk around by yourself. You had always had to be accompanied by a Native American male warrior.
Mm-hmm.
Because they would, you know, the Sasquatches will apparently carry you off. So that's what I've seen before or heard mm-hmm. of before. Again, this creature is not reported to have any of the ape-like features commonly associated with Bigfoot. But rather, it is noted that this is strikingly human in appearance. Accounts of the wild men also describe it as being much more aggressive, almost like it's feral.
Hmm.
That's a term you'll kind of find ingrained with the Tennessee Wildman is this feral nature it has. And this does tie into the idea of feral humans living in densely forested areas like Tennessee.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's actually one of the darker theories behind the infamous missing 411 phenomenon.
People
believe that people are being abducted by these feral wild people of the woods.
Because they're cannibals. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. While making their way through the rugged Smoky Mountain terrain, the Confederate Army, led by Braxton Bragg, reportedly encountered a group of these wild men who captured 5 soldiers during this encounter. Interestingly, reports of wild men have come from neighboring states such as West Virginia, North Carolina, and even as far north as Ohio and Pennsylvania, so mm-hmm. kind of crossing regions.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the reports began after the Civil War. And this has led to the theory that, as the conflict waged between the North and the South, that some people, rather than involving themselves, actually picked up, moved into remote regions of the right. United States,
mm-hmm.
built homesteads, and just stayed there and completely disconnected themselves with civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, they would regress to this primal feral state and become these wild men. And there's some very interesting stories of wild men in America. You can find some really cool stuff if you look up wild men. And again, you know, this episode, much like we did in our iceberg stuff, you know, we're just touching on things, touch and go, moving, trying to cover a lot of things.
Oh yeah.
So but you can find some really interesting stories of people finding wild men in the woods and trying to reintroduce them to society, and it's just not working. There's a few documented reports of things like that where I believe it was in North Carolina, there was a man they found in the woods who was just a wild man. He was naked and dirty and feral and, you know, living off the land and didn't speak English.
Oh my gosh.
They tried to, you know, reacclimate him to civilization, and he just broke free and ran in the woods and never be seen again. He just wanted nothing to do with it.
Oh my
and
God.
There, I mean, you can find stuff like that all over the world as well. I know there's stories like that out of Russia and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. These wild people have been found and it's documented stuff. So it's very interesting. If you look it up, it's pretty interesting.
There was one girl out in Russia that I heard of, and it's been many moons ago since I've like watched this video, but like she was like raised by dogs out in Russia, and like people found her and like reacclimated her like into society, but she like crawled around and like barked and like walked around on all like fours it's and everything. Wild. So, but like now, I guess like at the end of the video, it was like now she's like fully reacclimated into society and is like, you know, bipedal walking and everything now. So, I'll have to revisit that. That one was an interesting one.
It's a really interesting phenomenon. These people who like, you know, become feral. It's super interesting. It's a very interesting phenomenon. Have you ever seen the legend of Boggy Creek?
No, I have not.
Have you heard of it?
I have, yes. I think we've talked about Boggy Creek before, you and I have, maybe.
I used to watch it. I used to have it on DVD. I remember I got it at some point when I was a kid. I loved it when I was a kid. I loved it. It's just like a really old B movie from the 70s, directed by Charles B. Pierce and released in 1972. The Legend of Boggy Creek tells the story of the Falk monster that stalked the small town of Falk. And Falk is actually located in Arkansas.
Okay.
Yeah, I watched the Legend of Boggy Creek all the time when I was a kid on DVD. And I'm a big fan of Mystery Science Theater 3000. And they have an episode on the Legend of Boggy Creek Part 2, The Legend Continues.
Oh.
And it is hilarious. One of my favorite episodes of Mystery Science Theater 3000 ever. So I've seen that far more than I have the first one for the comedic nature. But the first one is a very straightforward, like, docudrama.
Okay.
It's basically what it is. Like, it's taking... It's famous for depicting, like, encounters with the creature where they'll have, like, the actual, like, eyewitness portraying themselves. So it's, like, you don't have these polished actors. It's, like, you know, these real, just, you know, hillbillies from Arkansas portraying themselves and kind of reenacting their encounters.
Interesting.
It's a really good movie. I mean, it was a fucking powerhouse
when
it came out. It was made for like nearly nothing.
Oh shit!
And just swept up because it was very popular at drive-ins and grindhouse theaters that would play because it was a cheap movie.
Nice.
So it was a very popular like drive-in movie.
We need to bring
back
more
in the 70s.
We need to bring more drive-in theaters back.
I've never been to one, but there's one here in Columbus. I just haven't been to it.
There's one in, I think it's Laurelville, I think is where the other one is.
Yeah, I think I've seen that one.
Either Laurelville or Lancaster is where the drive-in is, one of the two.
Now, reports of the creature have it as being over 7 feet tall, covered in dark, long hair, and emitting a terrible odor, similar to a wet dog, is what it's reported as.
Okay.
Which you'd get that, you know, thick hair, covered in mud, you know.
It's interesting all the different smells we have so far. Like,
Absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
We have different, we've got eggs, we've got wet dog, we've just got like a musk as well. Like, it's very interesting.
Yeah, well, you'd have to suspect it. Like, I mean, something covered in hair, I mean, it's gonna be
stinky.
You know, it's gonna stink as it's in, you know, expose the elements.
I wonder if it has something to do with like the different species and like the different like sweat glands it could produce or whatnot, or maybe like the different skin types. I don't know. That's something different.
Now, peering through this hair were two bright red eyes. The creature is said to be able to run swiftly with a long gait and its arms swinging wildly like a monkey. An interesting note with this creature is that the footprints found from the Falk monster are distinct because they have three toes. That's all it has, three toes.
Three whole toes, okay.
Yeah, just three toes. Now, most big footprints you find are, you know, very much like blown up versions of human feet. You know, five toes, you know, big toe, little toe, all that stuff. But the Falk monster, the Bigfoot, the footprints we found of it are three toes.
Okay.
Now, there is a theory as to why this is, and you'll see this across the southern Bigfoots. The theory is that the South, although it is like known as like, you know, rough country, it's rugged and rural, it is somewhat densely populated, but it's in pockets.
Oh yeah.
A big city here, big city there, bunch of, you know, swamp land or what have you. So the idea is that because of this popularization of these big cities and, you know, smaller communities coming up, that the Bigfoot population of the South, which is considered to be much smaller than what you would see in the West. The West mm-hmm. is, you know, the most densely populated for the Sasquatch creatures, but the South is kind of a more sporadic population. And that is because that they're being broken up by humans, and thus they're put in these smaller communities where they're inbreeding.
Oh, yep. Mm-hmm.
And as they inbreed, they get these deformations, you know, like, you know, three toes. You'll see it with human inbreeding.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
You have inbred human. You can tell when someone's inbred by, you know, the way their genes are. It just, they don't form properly.
It's part of why.
So that could be an explanation for Momo. It's the formed head. The Falk monster is three toes, which is another name for it. Three toes is another like variation of the Arkansas Bigfoot.
Oh my god!
Outside of Falk is three toes.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest reasons the royal family had to stop inbreeding. Fun fact.
Yeah, it's hell on your body.
Yeah, they kept getting like deformed heirs, and like that was a problem. So.
Now another side effect of inbreeding is heightened aggression.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that before. Yeah, it's one that's like less popular than like the physical deformation, but I mean, it would be because it's not a outward side effect; it's more inward, I guess.
Right. So, and that's something else to take into account when you're talking about these southern Bigfoot. Is the southern Bigfoot are much more aggressive than what you find in the north or the Midwest or whatever. They're much more aggressive. You'll find that throughout reports. If you look at things like the Falk monster or, you know, other ones we'll talk about, you find like much more aggressive behavior.
We're just hotheads, y'all, from the South. We get a lot hot.
The creature had been reported as far back as the 1850s, but the 1970s were no doubt the golden era of the Falk monster. A large number of missing livestock reports were attributed to the monster, which was said to be strong enough to simply pick up live hogs and carry them off. It's also shocking that a number of the reported sightings don't just include the typical monster crossing a road or spotted in a field that we commonly see, although there were plenty of those, but rather this creature was attempting to enter homes.
Mm-mm.
A woman named Elizabeth Ford claims that the monster reached through a window to grab her while she slept on the couch. Others would be awakened in the night by sounds of banging against their homes, sometimes the front door. Afterwards, they would find their homes covered in deep claw markings and three-toed footprints stamped around their property.
Oh, gosh.
Livestock, pets, all that would go missing. A local radio station offered a $1,000 bounty for the monster. The response was so popular that the local police had to issue a no-guns policy to keep neighboring communities safe from people firing their guns. They even issued a $60 fraudulent monster report fine on anyone reporting the Falk monster, and if it was discovered to be false, they would charge you $60 because it was getting out of hand. There were people like literally besieging the town, much like we saw when we talked about the Sister Lake monster, the Dewey Lake monster.
Mm-hmm.
But people were like coming there, but it was the South. So they were coming with guns and in posses and, you know, really causing, really creating a dangerous environment.
Oh, yeah.
So the local police had to step in. The Falk monster, the Boggy Creek creature, is interesting because it's transcended local folk legend. And it's really became a part of pop culture. There's a number of movies about the Boggy Creek monster, Small Town Monsters, of course, but then, you know, the Boggy Creek franchise. There's books,
mm-hmm.
there's songs, a fucking god awful television series. all this created around this legend of the Boggy Creek monster. And Boggy Creek is still a destination for cryptozoologists. Hope to catch a glimpse of this, you know, legendary creature.
Nice.
And we're just going to keep venturing south into the Honey Island Swamp in Louisiana. Dense, overgrown swamp lands of the bayou are rich with legends, such as the notorious Axeman, Madame Lullerie,
mm-hmm.
and of course the Rougarou, the most famous. I mean, I guess that would be like Louisiana's cryptid is the Rougarou.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Sasquatch, which is called the Honey Island Swamp Monster. Or if you want to channel your inner Cajun, it's La Bête Noire, is what the local Cajun refer to it as. In 1963, after retiring, a man named Harlan Ford picked up a hobby of going into the swamp to photograph wildlife. It was on one of these trips he would return with this story of seeing a 7-foot-tall hairy creature with yellow eyes that carried a putrid odor moving through the swamp. There are also reports of a very interesting thing, talking about variations as we have, depictions of the Honey Island Swamp like to incorporate the idea of it being a like Sasquatch reptile hybrid with like scales or, you know, reptilian claws or an alligator snout.
Okay.
Things like that. Now, that wasn't reported by Harlan Ford, but in the popular depictions of what people, you know, claim to be the Honey Island Swamp Monster, they incorporate swamp-like characteristics. You know, webbed feet, maybe a tail I've seen on a couple, but scales are like a big thing. People like to incorporate the idea of it having a Sasquatch build with crocodile scales.
Interesting.
A decade later, Ford would claim to have stumbled upon the carcass of a wild boar with its throat ripped out.
Oh.
Around the carcass were giant footprints with four toes. Calling back to that inbreeding. You know, it's not going to be consistent. It's
right.
If there's an inbreeding population, they're going to have various different deformations.
Right.
Now, unlike our other subjects, that there does appear to be a theory behind what could be the Honey Island Swamp Monster. Now, there's a local legend around this area that a train crashed in the early 1900s.
Okay.
And this train was carrying the occupants of a traveling circus. Now, after the crash, a troop of chimpanzees were unaccounted for. Now, this led to the theory that these chimpanzees actually survived the crash and escaped into the bayou, where they kind of evolved and adapted to this new environment and maybe became a creature that would be associated with the Honey Island Swamp Monster.
Huh.
Now, like the Falk Monster, the Honey Island Swamp Monster has found its way into the pop culture sphere. It has been featured on TV shows like The Secret Saturdays, which is a cartoon on Cartoon Network, Monsters and Mysteries in America.
Yeah.
And two shows that hold a very special place in my heart, In Search Of and Lost Tapes. Love those fucking shows.
Okay.
Now, it also has a distinction of not only, the distinction of being the only monster in this file, and I think we've talked about in general, maybe Mothman, who has a Monster High doll.
Based what?
On, yeah, from Mattel. There is a, I think her name's Honey Swamp, I think is her name.
Cute.
She's apparently the cousin of the Honey Island Swamp Monster. But yeah, it's a unique distinction that it has. It's featured in a girl's doll line by Mattel.
It's fucking cute.
Harlan Ford passed away in 1980. After his death, his family would find a reel of film which contained video footage showing the Honey Island Swamp Monster walking through the swamp, which I think is very interesting. It kind of adds a layer of credibility to this. Mm-hmm. Because if he had this footage of this monster, it's crazy that he didn't like bring it forth when he was alive to, you know, get some recognition. It's crazy that he held on to it and it wasn't found until after his death.
Yeah, it's so sad when that happens too, because it's like, you know, you're going to have so many questions about that and you're just going to want to dig into that person's mind. And there's just, I hate it when that happens. I hate it so much.
Yeah. To this day, Harlan Ford's granddaughter upholds his legacy, and she actually continues to lead expeditions and hunt for the monster and so on. You keep the legend of the Honey Island Swamp Monster alive in memory of her grandfather. Mm-hmm. Now, before we end our road trip across America and its monster-infested underbelly, we got to make a quick stop in Florida, because everything happens in Florida.
Yep. Everything.
Yeah, we're from Ohio. It all ends in Florida.
It really does.
Inevitably, you'll live your life in Ohio. You'll move to some shitty retirement home in Florida and you'll die.
That's
the life cycle of an Ohioan.
That's what we do. That's where we
That's what we do. You live in Ohio, you complain about it all your life, you move to Florida and you die. That's the Ohioan lifestyle, the life cycle.
And then you're brought back to Ohio after you're dead.
And you're brought back to you're brought back to Ohio and buried. We can't cover the various Sasquatch creatures without including the skunk ape.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
To me, when describing the skunk ape, it goes hand in hand with that of the Falk or Honey Island swamp monsters. This foul-smelling, aggressive swamp dweller with possible signs of inbreeding. The creature's been spotted in over two-thirds of the state of Florida and by some pretty reputable people. In 1997, Ochopee Fire Chief Vince Duer came forth with a photo of the creature taken near the Big Cypress National Preserve, where nearly 60 separate reports of the creature have been reported over the history of it. Hmm. Now, as far as photos of the skunk ape go, none can top the Miyaka skunk ape photos. In 2000, an envelope arrived at the Sarasota County Sheriff's Department with an anonymous letter claiming the enclosed photos were taken of a creature that they had caught stealing food. They believed the creature was an escaped orangutan from the zoo. The photos had become very polarizing, with many questioning the authenticity of the anonymous nature and the clarity of the photos. They're very good photos,
which
makes it weird, you know,
because
how many good photos or good videos of Bigfoot are there?
Yeah.
So have you ever seen these? Have you ever seen the Miyaka skunk?
No, I have not. How do you spell Miyaka?
M-Y-A-K-K-A.
I'm glad I spelled that. Or I asked you to spell that, I mean.
so they're very polarizing. You know, it's anonymous too, which is weird. Why would someone, you know,
oh,
I guess maybe they just want to stay out.
Yeah, I have seen this.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. If you've looked at cryptozoology stuff, you've seen them at some point.
Yeah.
The very, very clear, very distinct pictures of a Sasquatch-looking creature. Up close, which is another thing that I think makes it questionable.
I would expect that person to be dead after they took this photo.
Right.
Like, I mean, it looks
according to them, according to the letter, they took it by surprise and, like, their flash scared it away. Kind of an explanation. Now, some have even pointed out that the subject of the photo very closely resembles the Bigfoot statue on display at Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum.
Oh.
Which, if you look at that, it's like pretty much identical.
Oh.
Now, although modern reports of the skunk ape can be traced back to the 1920s, it may actually be part of Florida's history going further back. The Seminole people, native to Florida, have legends of the Esti Kopke, a powerful creature with a foul odor, stronger than any man, and covered in hair.
Mm.
And skeptics have suggested that perhaps the skunk ape is actually just a black bear that is suffering from some sort of like skin disorder, like mange or something along that nature.
Yeah.
But despite this, Florida has embraced the skunk ape. There was a time when people would form posses to venture into the Florida swamplands to hunt this thing when it was reported. But times have changed. And people that once feared the creature now look at it as kind of like a unofficial mascot for the state.
Cool.
When you go into the more rural parts of Florida, you can find signs, advertisements, roadside attractions that incorporate the skunk ape into it, because it really has become just a part of the state. It's the Florida cryptid.
I love that.
We talk about in this file a lot these various creatures and how they can be embraced by the local community, and everyone benefits, honestly. So but that's our little road trip, part one.
We went across the
Northeast, Midwest, down to the South, and hit on 10 different states, 10 different creatures, all with, you know, similar yet distinct variations, which I think is very interesting. And the different ways that, you know, the communities around them respond is also interesting. So
yeah, I love how different all of the reactions are within the community. You know, you have people who are like, I want absolutely nothing to do with it. You have people who are totally outside of it, and generations well after those sightings that are like, no, we're going to fully embrace it. And then you kind of have those ones that are kind of in between. So I love the different reactions. It just, it makes it more real that, you know, there's so many just different outcomes of that.
Yeah, I mean it's crazy too, because like I could easily do a sequel to just this episode. We could talk more about creatures from the Northeast, from the Midwest, from the South.
I'd love.
There's Alabama. There's Georgia. There's North Carolina. There's Indiana. There's you know, like I said, the Dakotas. Mm-hmm. They have, you know, their own set of like prairie Sasquatch type creatures.
Oh my gosh, that's been cool. Seen out there,
and just hundreds and hundreds of years of Native American lore. Mm-hmm. Delaware, all these different other states that we didn't even touch on, because we'd be here all day. I mean, we could easily make this a 3-4 hour episode if we want to talk about all this stuff. But definitely, I mean, this is open to exploring more of these three regions. And I mean, you know, they could probably even do their own episode, like we're going to be doing the next episode, where we talk about the West Coast Sasquatch, because there is just so much to talk about. You know, the Sasquatch creatures, many people don't realize, have been a part of America as long as America's existed, before America was a thing.
That's so cool. Ty, I feel like you could do an episode like per state, like every different Bigfoot.
I had actually kicked that around a while back, of like maybe like, man, 50 episodes or 48, because, or no, be 49, because Hawaii has no Bigfoot.
Right.
Type creatures, maybe 49 episodes, it would be a task. But I definitely think that, you know, these three regions could be revisited at any point, you know, just to expand on more of these weird variations. And I'm sure we'll get comments or people mentioning, you know, hey, what about this? What about that? But, you know, I just wanted to focus on these ones. These are the most popular ones I've heard of that had these really distinct features that I think were interesting, you know, tails and skin, which, you know, we talk about the stone giants. There is a theory behind that, that actually what it is mud. And it kind of ties in with Big Muddy, which is like a thing that Native American warriors would do, was to cake mud on themselves, let it dry, and make it natural armor. So that could be something that stone giants were doing to protect them from Native American warriors. But
interesting.
Yeah, that does it for File 040, our 40th episode, our 40th mainline episode. Of course, that doesn't include our cross-examinations, encounters, and things of that nature. But
all the extras.
You know, we're rolling on. We're rolling on to File 041 here in a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We hope you guys enjoy this. We've talked a lot about cryptids here this year, it feels like. The iceberg, incorporating them into it. And, you know, we talked about the Yeti and the Outlaw Pass episodes. So cryptids are getting some much love here this year.
Absolutely. Even revisiting Mount Shasta and everything. We talked about quite a few.
Mount Shasta, we have the Mothman episode back, like our third episode. So, but thank you guys for joining us here as we talked about these three regions here. Part one of this Sasquatch series, and part two will be coming up here in a couple weeks. And we got a lot to talk about, because the Western Sasquatch stuff gets insane. So that'll be coming on April 16th. But I think that does it for us, Bailey.
I think so too.
Bigfoot a lot today. There's a lot of things to look up. If you guys, like I said, any of these subjects, you could type in on Google, and you'll find far more lore than what was presented here. I mean, some of these could have even done their own episode. We could probably done a whole episode on the Falk Monster.
Alone.
Or Grassman, even. Grassman, Minerva Monster.
Mm-hmm.
Could have probably done an episode. But yeah, it's something for you guys. And if you have local legends of Bigfoot, let us know in the comments below. I'd like to hear. I always love looking at shit like this. But that does it for us, Bailey. File 040 is in the books. Make sure you guys follow us at Cult Talk Net across the board, Instagram, Facebook, X, Twitter, whatever it is, YouTube, all the things at Cult Talk Net. You'll find us. Cult Talk Conspiracy every other Tuesday, Cult of Lore every first and third Thursday, Call to Campbell on Mondays sometimes. I'm sure we have a shit ton of other things coming or maybe out right now. So just make sure you guys check out Cult Talk Net to keep up all the things. Hashtag join the talk, as we say. There we have it. I've been Ty.
I've been Bailey.
And until next time, question everything.